Hello and welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the lossy Luke Cutforth.
I'm not a compression algorithm.
This week we're talking about losing LBs and punifying pills, but first, we have a wee review.
I crave feedback.
Well, it's a long one, so strap in for this, Luke. It's 5 stars. The title is Just a Wee Review, and it goes on to say, very good. Thumbs up emoji.
Wow.
Yeah.
In depth. Thank you so much.
A saga.
I know how I can improve. I know what I'm doing right. Thank you very much.
And if you'd like to leave an equally in-depth and thoughtful review, head to Apple Podcasts and do that, please. Don't care if you're not listening on it. Just go. And speaking of, I've got a question. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you wanna carry on listening to this, because the folks that are watching on YouTube, they can go down to the comments and answer this. If you're on Spotify, you can go to the Spotify spot and answer the questions wherever they put that. I've never seen them, but you can answer them on Spotify. If you're on Apple or anywhere else, you can't answer there. So here is what you do to answer this question. Become a black hole. Now, the way to do that, it seems difficult, but the way to do it is just eat every single thing you see, hear, smell, taste, or in any other way sense. Is it living? Is it a baby? Doesn't matter. Eat it. Would a black hole care? No, it wouldn't. Once it's crossed the event horizon of your mouth, it's in your tum, and it's all good. They can't arrest you, because you can just eat them. The question is, are you diabetic? I didn't say how to answer it, but I'm pretty sure if someone becomes a black hole, I'll catch wind of that. Are you diabetic?
No, but interestingly, I frequently feel tired, and every time I go to the doctor to go, I feel tired all the time. They go, maybe you're diabetic, and then they prick my finger, and then they go, oh, you're not.
You're just tired.
And then they don't offer me any other help.
Well, if you were diabetic, maybe get some diabetes. Walk on into that doctor's office at hospital, and they'll start helping you out. Maybe that's what it is. It's just like a secret code to get in.
Finally. Have you got your diabetes yet? If not, we can't help you.
It's like being a part of that, what is it? Like the Freemasons or whatever.
Weirdly, I know a Freemason.
You can't say that.
I think I can.
Yeah, but...
He says it about it all the time. He's constantly talking about his Freemasonry duties.
Well, thank you for doxing your Freemason friend, Luke. I don't think they're supposed to tell other people about that, so I'm sure... If you stop seeing him, you know why. It's because the Freemasons love some psychos. Maybe that's what he was trying to tell you, to impress you. Who knows? But yeah, go ahead to the comments and answer that question or do whatever else it was I said. Shall we talk about the topic of this week, Luke?
Please. I think I know what it might be, but
okay.
Go for it.
I will go for it, as you have requested. Do you know what Ozempic is? Or perhaps you know it under the name Wegovy.
Ah, Wegovy. Yes, this is this new drug. Which is like taken at least the news by storm.
Mm.
It's a weight loss drug. Mm. It's incredibly effective, as far as I know. And it's in like real short supply.
So much of what you said was almost correct. I want to give it to you. No, but this is good. This is a really good starting point because look, when I started looking into this, I knew nothing. You know more than I did when I went into it.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, now I know more than you, but that's because I've got all my notes in front of me. So... Is that great?
Yes, we are not the same.
To be fair, I'll walk away from this having remembered what we've spoken about. You will walk away from this with a blank slate again. I feel like you're going to walk away knowing less than you came in knowing.
I have the most active hippocampus of all people in the entire history of the world. It's just like, oh, is there information? Nah, get rid of that.
It's a sieve, man. It's like, nah, I don't need none of that. But no, yeah. So, I mean, you're not wrong on a number of fronts. I mean, it's not a new drug, really. It's not. It's the brand name is new. That kind of Wegovy is new, kind of, right? Maybe about a year or so-ish old. And is it a weight loss drug? Yes, it's a drug that can be used for weight loss.
Mm.
I would hesitate to call it a weight loss drug. And yeah, whatever else it was that you said, we'll find out through the course of this episode. Because honestly, Luke, I didn't store it in my brain.
Wow, how the tables have turned.
Anyway, Ozempic, Wegovy, or semaglutide, if you want to be fancy about it, or scientific. You could probably pronounce it better than I did as well. Anyway, so what do you think this drug is
it okay? So there'll be a few different things it could be. Is it like an appetite suppressant? No,
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, but no.
Is it a weight loss drug?
Yes.
What? Well,
insofar as, like, I mean, laxatives are also a weight loss drug.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, but does it cause you to lose weight? And is it used on label as a weight loss drug?
Okay, it's used on label as a weight loss drug, but okay, there's more to it than that. That's why I kind of want to do an episode on this, because I didn't know anything about this. I saw people talking about it and saying TikTok bad, and you know me. If someone says TikTok bad, I'm on it like a bloodhound. I hate that. No, I don't hate TikTok, but I do enjoy seeing whether it's just old people shouting at clouds or whether it's young people being insane. Those are the two options when it comes to or the middle people, you know, like us, just being bitter about both groups. Besides the point, Luke. So I looked into Ozempic because people have been using it as a weight loss sort of thing. So it's a glucagon like peptide 1 agonist, I believe. It's a kind of drug that's generally used to treat type 2 diabetes. Mm. Not so much obesity or, you know, being used for weight loss. I mean, I say not so much. It is now being used for weight loss, but initially it was used for type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm. right? And it's got FDA approval for both diabetes and weight loss, I believe, but under different names. So the names that I gave you, Ozempic and Wegovy, I didn't give them to you. Your name is Luke Cutforth, and that was given to you by your parents. I've given you nothing in the way of names, other than Saigai, your title. Not the point, Luke, but those two names, Wegovy and Ozempic, they're brand names, right? Semaglutide is the name of the actual sort of active ingredient. That's the actual drug. So that can be under, you know, almost any brand name. Say almost any brand name. It can be under a different brand name, right? And Ozempic and Wegovy, they are made by the same company. They're the same drug. They just have different names because they're used for different things. Mm-hmm. So slightly different sort of like dosages and little unimportant, but actually very important if you're taking them, things like that. So it's got FDA approval. I think it was first approved in, semaglutide first approved by the FDA in 2017 for type 2 diabetes. And I know what you're going to say. You're like, oh, that's new. 7 years, Luke.
Yeah, you only get 20 years on your patent, I think. So that's an old drug. considering it's 20 years, like, including the time that you take to pass it. Mm. This is the UK, in the UK at least, you have to pass trials in those 20 years. And then once you're ready to go onto market, then you've got whatever you've got left, like another 10 years to make all your money back. So yeah 7 years is an old drug, potentially.
Yeah, it's not, I wouldn't call it new at the very least. Yeah. You know what I mean? Relatively, but yeah. And then it's now been approved for use with weight loss. I think in 2019, an oral one was approved for diabetes. And then Wegovy in 2021, I believe, was approved for people over the age of 18. And then in 2022, at the end of 2022, it was approved for weight loss in those under the age of 18. So over the age of 12. Basically. So that's the US. Would you like to hear about something a little bit nicer?
Scandinavian countries?
No. Oh. Nice.
The National Institute of Care Excellence.
That's not even what it is.
Oh, what?
No. You'd think it was that. It's the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence.
Nice.
They just dropped the H. They genuinely just dropped the H. Like, they don't have an H in nice. They don't just, you know, kind of like take it that way and be like, no, it's pronounced nice. They drop the H because it doesn't look right.
Right.
Yeah, but no, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. The National Institute for Health and Care Excellence.
Nice.
Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Good. So that's kind of, I don't want to say like the UK's FDA, but I mean, I guess that's probably the easiest way to understand what it is.
In the simplest terms.
Yeah.
It's our equivalent.
It's not that, but it's that enough that you can, yeah, that's fine, right?
You're not a doctor. The difference doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay. It launched in the UK on the 4th of September, I think, last year, 2023. And it's now, you can get it on the NHS. There are some caveats with that. So I think it can be used for a maximum of 2 years. On top of that, there are some sort of limitations on who can have it. And during that 2 years of, you know, being on it, you can't just take the sort of weight loss drug and be like, cool, that's it. I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing. It needs to be alongside a sort of reduced calorie diet, increased physical activity, like basically weight management that they already do on the NHS, and then you can have this alongside it. Mm-hmm. Kind of in the same way that, you know, they'll sometimes give you therapy alongside antidepressants. Mm-hmm. Except nothing like that at all, whatsoever, because this isn't depression. This is weight loss.
Yeah.
Good?
Different things.
Yeah.
It turns out.
Look, they're sometimes not the same.
Sometimes comorbid, but different things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. That's very true, Luke. Good job.
Don't tell me I don't provide nothing on this podcast.
Yes, that's true. What would we do if we didn't have someone stating the obvious every now and then?
Whoa. That's so rude. You're going to get comments about that.
But you know what? People sometimes do comment and they're like, oh, you're horrible, blah. And I'm like, do you think he would still be doing this if it really hurt his feelings? He would. He genuinely would still be doing
it. Trapped.
You're not trapped. You can leave anytime you want.
I'll just be shot on the way out.
No, you've just been convinced that you have to come back. Okay. You know.
That makes sense.
Anyway, moving on, Luke. Being used for a maximum of 2 years alongside, weight management, like, you know, with a healthcare professional or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Right.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Basically. Yeah. And so there are some caveats that I've said, right? You've got to have at least one weight related comorbidity. So you can't just have you can't just have obesity. You can't just be, you know, too big for healthcare officials to give you respect. You must also have another
sure another thing that's happening because of the weight.
So that's like, say, some kind of cardiovascular disease, or I think diabetes, maybe it might be one of the ones. Hypertension as well.
You have just high blood pressure.
It's hypertension.
Is that what hypertension
is? Oh, do you not? Sorry. Okay, I thought you were making it.
No.
Yeah, hypertension is high blood pressure. Yeah,
thank you.
Sorry It's just because I just said it.
Yeah, sure.
I thought you were.
Yeah, yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah, no. Hypertension, cardiovascular disease, right? Maybe some other things. And so you've got to have that, one of those.
Yeah.
And also a BMI of at least 35, or a BMI of 34.9. Provided, and I'm going to read this verbatim, provided they meet the criteria for referral to specialist weight management services, including that conventional treatment has been unsuccessful, right?
Okay.
So basically what this means is that, you know, you can't just walk down to the GP and be like, hello, GP, I am of a relatively normal weight, maybe slightly above average for what should be expected of my height, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to lose some pounds for the summer. Not pounds as in money. No, I mean pounds as in a measure of my weight or mass. I can't remember which one. And the doctor would, of course, say, too much information. Don't know who you are. You're not a patient here. But also, even if you were, you don't fall into the criteria. Uh-huh. So go away, or maybe do it illegally. I don't suppose the doctor would say that, but I imagine people probably would be doing it illegally, which...
Don't do that.
Illegal drugs is more dangerous than legal drugs, usually, right? Except for a few. But, like, don't try and get around, a prescription for things like that. It's probably not safe.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good broad strokes message. Yeah.
Yeah, very middle of the road. Don't do things that dangerous and may hurt you, or do them, but probably don't do them.
Yeah.
Please no one, but disappoint everyone. That's my motto. Anyway, Luke, so as I've said, you know, you can get it on the NHS, but it's not just a handing it out like Tic Tacs. It's more like a Wonka bar with a golden ticket in it. It's much harder to find. No? Is that not a reference you understand?
Not really.
A Wonka bar.
No, I understand.
Like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
It's because... The golden ticket was, there were five distributed across the world.
Yeah.
And so that's necessarily probably harder to find than a Tic Tac.
Because
Tic Tacs you can just buy anywhere.
For sure.
Yeah?
I'm going to say yeah, for expediency.
So anyway, they would also say that you should consider stopping treatment if less than 5% of the initial weight has been lost after 6 months. So if it doesn't seem to be working, then stop.
Yeah, I think that's a good guideline too.
Yeah.
If it's not working after quite a lot amount of time,
mm-hmm.
maybe don't take it more because there are risks associated with taking it and it's not having the benefits.
You have no idea if there are risks associated with taking it. Anyway, next section, the risks associated... No, no. It's not the next section. That'll come later. Do you know what diabetes is? Do you know what diabetes is?
It's a problem with insulin production.
Not necessarily.
Okay, it's that maybe and maybe something else.
Well, there's more than one type of diabetes.
Oh.
But no, you would be right. That is... One type of diabetes is an issue with insulin production.
Cool.
Unfortunately, that's not necessarily what's going on with type 2 diabetes.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it is, but also it sometimes isn't.
Wow.
Basically, a type 2 diabetes. Do you know the difference between the types of diabetes?
Well, I know that one of them you can be born with and one of them you get, through... what would, I suppose, would be called, like, lifestyle choices? Like, if you eat too much sugar...
Not necessarily lifestyle choices.
Okay, but, like, things that have happened to your body post your birth that are a result of, like, what you put in your body. Whether you did that deliberately or not is a separate conversation. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Like,
I think what you're basically...
Like, you get diabetes through the diet that you've eaten.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And the way that you want to think about it is that, you know, some are born with diabetes... And some have diabetes thrust upon them.
Okay.
Shakespeare. It is.
Yeah.
It's most of a Shakespeare quote.
Yeah.
Butchered.
It's mostly a Shakespeare quote.
To be tis or not to be tis. Diabetes.
Oh.
That is. There you go. That's more Shakespeare. I'm classically trained. Not in Shakespeare, but
in something.
So type 2 diabetes is the most common type of diabetes. Basically, your blood sugar is too high. And that could be for a number of reasons. Really, mostly like two reasons. Two is a number.
Mm-hmm. Yep, two is a number.
Yes.
It's the second one.
Third.
I don't think zero is a number.
That's very true. Good job. Well done. Oh, you got it. But you did forget about all of the decimal numbers between one and two.
I don't like them. We're not friends. That's just other numbers cosplaying as small numbers.
What, you're saying they're not real numbers?
They're not real numbers.
A little math joke for our math heads out there. Anyway, no. So there are a number of reasons. Two, really mostly what. It's type 2 diabetes is when your body essentially kind of becomes resistant to insulin is kind of the vibe generally, mm-hmm. right? And so do you know what insulin does?
It breaks down sugars in your blood?
Well, it doesn't. Well, it's, yeah, it regulates.
It reduces the blood sugar in your blood, yeah.
Yeah, so it regulates your blood glucose levels. Basically, you can turn glucose into glucagon and it doesn't really matter. You probably did it in high school biology. I don't want to go over it here because we'll probably do an episode on diabetes and I want to save it for that. So just put a pin in this and vaguely understand what diabetes is, right? Either your body doesn't make enough insulin or it doesn't sort of use the insulin appropriately. Like it's not responsive enough to the insulin, right? And that means that you've got too much glucose in your blood, which means that you don't have enough glucose in the parts of your body where you need it. Glucose being sugar, sugar being the energy that your body use, where you get your energy from, right? Mm-hmm. So if you've got no energy in your body, it's much like being dead.
Yeah.
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 If you have not enough energy in your body, it's much like bad things happening. Shall I tell you the symptoms of it?
Yeah, go on. Tiredness?
Peeing more than usual.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Feeling thirsty all the time.
Oh, sweet pee as well. Your pee is sweet. I think that's true.
That is true.
Sweet pee.
That is true. I just... So, yeah, the story goes that essentially, before, you know, tests for diabetes and stuff, a really quick and easy way to, you know, see if someone is diabetic is if they've peed in a cup, quick taste, it tastes sweet, then they're probably diabetic because the blood glucose is getting into their urine.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is urine for, Luke?
Getting rid of stuff that's not big solids.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's getting rid of liquid, basically like liquid and small particle waste.
Mm-hmm.
Urea, basically. Yeah. Anyway, that's peeing more than usual, feeling thirsty all the time, feeling very tired, losing weight without trying to, like itching around your genitals, thrush, cuts or wounds taking too long to heal, blurry vision. But a lot of people don't have any symptoms. This is all just from the NHS, by the way. You could find this out just by reading the NHS website yourself. But it can exacerbate other issues or kind of... give you an increased risk of having other issues, like, you know, like losing a foot, eye problems, nerve issues. Basically, you can't just kind of ignore having type 2 diabetes without there probably being serious side effects.
Right.
But if you actually, like, you know, look after it, it's not a child. If you, you know...
manage it,
you know, like an adult, then yeah, you should be fine. It is like a lifelong, it's a lifelong condition.
I think for most, it's a lifelong
condition. I think there are ways, I think if you're sort of pre-diabetic, you can manage it through diet. And look, I don't know all that much about diabetes. It's really not the point of this episode. If you want to see us talk about diabetes, go to our Patreon and make us do that. That's the only way. Anyway, so that's diabetes. Basically, it's too much sugar in your blood because insulin is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. Your body's either not making enough of it or it's not sort of responding to it.
Not getting the message.
Right? Yeah, not getting the message, right? And obesity, that's the other thing we're going to be talking about today, right? Because obviously the drug is primarily, initially used for type 2 diabetes, and it's now gone on to be used for obesity. So what is obesity?
I think it probably is defined by like a BMI measure.
Yes.
Which we know that there are limitations to BMI measures.
Do
but
we?
The BMI goes basically like normal range in quotes, and then it goes like overweight, and then I think severely overweight, and then obese.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically being much heavier than your height would suggest you ought to be, according to the doctor.
Yeah, but also, and we've spoken about this before in another episode, BMI has many flaws. Basically, it's just, as you're saying, you're just putting your height against your weight.
You could be real muscly.
Yeah.
And show up as obese.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there are sort of edge cases where it doesn't work. Yeah. BMI is generally a good way of being like, looking at a large group of people, and being like, well, roughly what's going on here? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But yeah, no, it shouldn't be used as a be-all or end-all, and there are a number of problems with it, right? But yeah, overweight and obesity, according to the world... But yeah, overweight and obesity, according to the World Health Organization, are abnormal or excessive fat accumulation that presents a risk to health, right? So I think that's a pretty clear thing there, right? It's not just being overweight.
Mm-hmm.
It's having a sort of an amount of fat on your body that is posing a health risk, right? Yeah. That is kind of the point there. And that would be a BMI of over 30 would be obese. And apparently a quarter of adults in the UK are obese.
Yeah, the stats on this are pretty mad, actually.
Yeah.
Like, especially when you look at
kids.
Like kids. Yeah.
Yeah,
fifth of kids. That is like genuinely quite like scary. We need to...
Yeah.
Do something about how much sugar we're consuming.
Well, we're doing better than the Americans in that respect. They're 40% of Americans. And like, that's assuming that obesity is, you know, like quite specifically what it's saying there, something that is posing a health risk. Because obviously, you know, there are like, there's a really difficult sort of part of this conversation where you've kind of got to maneuver through it and not kind of make the statement that being... like having fat on your body is bad,
mm-hmm.
being bigger is bad, like, because mm-hmm. those things aren't true, mm-hmm. obviously, right? And that's not what we're trying to say. Well, that's not what I'm trying to say. Look, I can't speak for you.
Yeah.
If you want to be fat phobic, you do it on your own time.
Thank
you. But no, yeah. I mean, like, if we talk about obesity as, you know, being linked to heart disease, diabetes, all of these sorts of conditions, right, that can impact your health and well-being, then yeah, we probably do want people being more active and so many other things. But it is more complicated than that. We'll get into that in a bit. We've also done an episode on this sort of topic before, which you could probably go and watch as well if you're interested. But to move on from what obesity is and kind of the stats on it, let's talk about a little bit about the complications and comorbidities. And when I say let's talk about it, I'm going to read you off a list, and then we're going to move on.
And I'll nod politely.
Yeah, you can do that if you want. Mm. You can nod rudely if you want, Luke.
I don't know how to do that.
I'm sure you could figure it out. So, complications and comorbidities with obesity. Dear me. Type 2 diabetes, coronary heart disease, which is one of the biggest killers in the world. I think, I think heart disease is the biggest killer in the world, other than the giant Jack the Ripper. Ooh. He's like Jack the Ripper, but bigger.
What's this from?
He's the biggest killer.
What about,
he's big.
Okay. What about Bigfoot?
Bigfoot doesn't kill. Bigfoot is kind.
He's a peace-loving, giant, hairy man.
Bigfoot is not a man. He is a Bigfoot. It's in the name, Luke. Don't you know anything of science?
Bigfoot, well, like a slug.
Okay, right. Stroke can also some types of cancer. These can also be sort of exacerbated or caused, or you could be put at increased risk of developing these things due to sort of obesity, right? So that would be kind of everything there to get you up to speed so we can actually have the conversation about what this episode is about.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I think it is, but it's rather quiet this time.
Well, Luke, we want to keep a big old secret about this SciGuys merch.
Yes, please do not tell anybody and do not purchase any of it. Otherwise, people will find out.
They might see you wearing our merch or displaying our merch and think, oh, wow, what a cool person. And I'll tell you this, as a cool person myself, having people think you're a cool person can be very, very stressful.
Yeah, we can't have that. And we also can't have you supporting the show to exist that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah, so absolutely, under no circumstances should you go to normalcitizen.store and pick up some SciGuys merch. Some SciGuys merch like beanies and posters and t-shirts and calendars and cool stuff like that. Definitely don't go to that store and buy that.
Goodness me, that's an awful lot of stuff that I'm not going to purchase.
Absolutely, Luke. Now let's get back to the show before anyone listens to us.
God, I really hope we got away with that one.
So, Luke, how do you think Semaglutide or Wegovy or whatever you want to call it works?
Ooh, okay. So I think because of what we've said about diabetes, it's going to be doing something with the available blood sugar, the available glucose in the blood, probably reducing the available blood sugar in the blood so that that doesn't go to the cells and isn't sort of, what's the word, like turned into, metastasized, is that the word?
Metabolized?
Metabolized into fat cells.
Oh, that is a very, that's an interesting one there, Luke. Why don't we carry on through the mechanism and we'll find out how correct you are. Maybe not very.
One day I'll guess right.
So just listen and you can make your own mind up, okay? So glucagon-like peptide 1 and glucose-dependent insulinotrophic polypeptide, or GIP. I'm going to be calling them GLP-1 and GIP from now on, okay? Because it's a mouthful and I don't need that. Although we might need to pad the runtime of this episode, so if I switch back, that is why. But basically, they're both hormones that they kind of act to reduce, I think, the glucose in the blood. They basically work alongside insulin, right? They're part of that whole sort of insulin and blood sugar, glucagon, I don't want to call it a cycle, but that kind of process, you know, where it regulates your blood sugar.
Yeah, like the team.
Yeah.
The team of guys who are reducing the blood sugar in your blood.
Or girls, or non-binary workers, because our bodies accept all people. And all peptides. Anyway, basically what goes on, right, when you've got type 2 diabetes, like, you kind of, those parts don't really work properly. So, if you just kind of chuck in GLP-1, it can just make it work again. Yeah. So that would be glucagon-like peptide 1, the first one I mentioned. GLP-1 is, as I said, part of that whole sort of process. You just chuck a bunch of that into the body and it might just kind of solve the problem, right? And so essentially it makes your body release more insulin, right? Or it can kind of like jumpstart the sort of secretion of insulin.
That's the agonist bit that you mentioned earlier in. It's like antagonizing it to, like.
So opposite, actually.
Oh.
So an agonist is something that connects with a receptor, which is like so that's literally agonist being the opposite sort of word of antagonist, right? But you're going the right direction etymologically speaking.
I just meant like poking. It's basically poking. It goes in and it goes poke, 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 and the body goes okay and does something.
Yeah, but it binds to a receptor and body. You know what? You can have whatever view you want.
Grabby, grabby, grab.
Let's just not have you do a biology test anytime soon, because I don't know if I go to live with myself to see the result that you get after 5 years of this. Is it been however long we've been doing this nonsense? Okay. But yeah, no. So you basically chuck a bunch of GLP-1 in there, and it does a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I'll read this sentence out for you, see if you can figure out what it means. Furthermore, GLP-1 receptor agonists can decrease pancreatic beta cell apoptosis whilst promoting their proliferation.
Yeah, no, Google Translate for me.
Okay. So GLP-1 receptor agonists, don't need to worry about what that is. We've kind of just already discussed. Can decrease pancreatic beta cell apoptosis. So like apoptosis would be like programmed cell death, right? That's when like basically a cell kills itself. And if you decrease that, then you're stopping sort of cells from being killed. But also proliferation is when they make more, right?
Great. Thank you. That's very interesting. I understand.
But basically the most important part about this for us to understand right now is that when using this drug, right, which is essentially just kind of getting with your hormones and making it produce more of what you want it to produce, right? It also means that your stomach doesn't empty as quick, or not just your stomach. It's so delayed gastric emptying, right? So you feel you're fuller for longer, but then on top of that, it will sort of inhibit the production of glucagon from pancreatic alpha cells, right? If you've got high blood sugar levels.
No, that's fascinating. That's really interesting. So it's doing like multiple different things that all could help lead to weight loss.
Yes, but like incidentally almost, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately, like that is kind of why it's used for weight loss, as far as I can tell. Right, that like one of the things is you just don't really feel as hungry. So when you were asking if it's an appetite suppressant, like, yeah, but no, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not. I don't think you could really call it an appetite suppressant insofar as it just makes you feel fuller for longer, by a few different relatively like sort of natural means.
That's fascinating.
And if one of the reasons that like you know, because obviously obesity and just in general, people's weight, a large part of it is genetic. Yes, there's environmental factors. Yes, there's like your diet, and like you physically cannot gain weight without, you know, eating more energy than you expend. Mm-hmm. Right. That is thermodynamically not possible. Obviously, it's much more complicated than just like, you know, if you eat a lot, then you gain weight because there's hormones and so much going on in the body.
Metabolism,
right. Yeah. Like a lot of going on. Yeah. Right. But also, if you think about it, right, maybe like, you know, one of the reasons that someone feels like a desire to eat or like a drive to eat like often and maybe more than is potentially healthy for them, it's because they don't feel full. Right. And if this is like solving that issue, then that might be beneficial in that sense. But let's carry on before we say anything about that, right? Basically, it can sort of have an average weight loss. It can promote an average weight loss of 2.9 kilograms compared to placebo, right? Which is a fair amount, right? 2.9 kilograms just by taking this alongside doing the other things that you're doing. And it can lower your blood pressure and total cholesterol as well, right? Apparently it can also improve heart function to some degree, left ventricular ejection fraction, myocardial contractility, coronary blood flow, cardiac output, and endothelial function while reducing infarction size and overall risks for a cardiovascular event. Basically, makes your heart work a bit better, gets more blood to your heart, and also reduces your risk of, I guess, some kind of heart attack or heart issue, you know? So, I mean, it can have all of these effects as well. Increased glucose uptake in the muscles, decreased glucose production in the liver, basically just making you feel fuller for longer, not just through what I said earlier, but also because it directly interacts with the hypothalamus and sort of then directly is like, yeah, you're not as hungry anymore. So, like, yeah, delayed gastric emptying. So you're like kind of literally sort of fuller for longer, but also makes you feel fuller for longer in your head by interacting with a part of your brain.
That is fascinating. And yeah, it's completely like, it's like Viagra. It's like, this is just something we've discovered it does whilst it was intended to do a different thing first.
Not real. Well, no.
Okay.
Well, no, So I think the difficult thing here is that like, we're talking kind of about hormones and we're talking about basically putting something in our body to replicate something that's already there, right? Mm-hmm. We're just basically trying to put it in increased levels than what it would kind of normally be in the body, mm-hmm, right? Or something similar enough that it binds to the same sort of receptor. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily like Viagra, right? Wherein, like, we wanted to do this thing, but it also does this other thing. It's more, this is the process that happens, and, well, we can use it for something. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are effects that one might expect, and people are now wanting to use it for weight loss. For, you know, basically, probably because our culture kind of tells you you need to be a certain weight, and that weight is generally on the slimmer side of healthy for most people, mm-hmm. or what is sort of comfortable or feasible for most people, right? So like, is it like Viagra where it's kind of an accident? I wouldn't really say so.
Okay.
Because it just seems kind of more like, to me, it just seems more like this is just how this kind of thing works in your body. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. it's basically mimicking something that's kind of produced by your body already.
Yeah, I guess what I'm asking there is like, so the thing that is normally produced by your body, does that do all of these other things as well? Or does it just do the blood glucose part of it?
I would imagine that it does all the other things as
okay,
well.
Okay, right.
Just based on, I've not looked that up specifically, but mm-hmm. just based on how your body works, where like it's economical. There's rarely one, like, you know, something being used for only one thing. If it's used for something in your brain, it could have a different effect in your gut.
It's really lucky that it's not like, it does all those really helpful things that are all like, it's perfect system where it's reducing, potentially reducing your weight from multiple different angles. But it also like makes you want to listen to music all day. Like, imagine if it just had some other incredibly separate, because you said your body's economical, some incredibly separate other thing that it made you do. Like, it made you really like cartoons.
Yeah.
Or you want to paint.
Sure.
At first I was going to say it makes you want to dance, but that also would help you lose weight. So that would be great.
It likely could, yeah. But yeah, no. So basically, just to go over how this works again, you're not increasing GLP-1 in your body, but you're increasing like analogs to it. So like things that are similar enough to bind to the same receptors, right? So you're putting in a drug that mimics something in your body. That makes it sort of better at producing insulin, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. And then it also has these other effects because that's likely the effects of this chemical in your body in other places. And when it gets to that sort of level, these are the effects that you see. And so that's why, you know, it's gone from being used for diabetes to being used for weight loss. On top of that as well, it's not like a primary sort of treatment for diabetes. I think metformin is still the preferred one, but it's only if you're sensitive to that you can put on this, or if there's other complications or other things going on. But you can also understand as well that with type 2 diabetes, you probably noticed that obesity was mentioned when I was talking about sort of comorbidity with type 2 diabetes, and vice versa when I was talking about obesity, right? So you could understand that probably, right, in giving this drug to people, they noticed some, it was fairly moderate weight loss alongside both of these things. And, you know, for someone who wants to lose weight for that sort of health reason, because it, you know, like for some reason or another, that is impacting their health. Like it does make sense that this can help them in doing so, you know, in the same sense that like some thyroid issues, which can cause weight gain, treating that, obviously, like it will have other effects. Like you don't want to leave a thyroid condition untreated, right? But that would then cause you probably to lose the weight that you gain from said thyroid condition as well. So it's kind of similar in that vein, I see. But let's talk about weight loss. Let's get like right into weight loss. My question for you, Luke, is why is weight loss hard?
Why is weight loss hard? Okay, well, firstly, because there'll be a lot of reasons why you might have gained the weight in the first place. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of reasons. So it might be you might have an eating disorder, you might have issues with emotional eating, and then you've got to actually attack those. You can't just stop eating. And also because, you know, hunger is like one of the most basic feelings. And when you're trying to reduce calories, you don't just stop being hungry just because, yes, your body does have some stores on you which it could use, but it doesn't want to use them. It wants to eat food. And so, yeah, there's just loads of things sort of conspiring within your body and your psyche that mean that like it's very difficult to lose weight.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on top of that, the hormonal aspect as well, right? So the way that it kind of works is that if you lose weight if you go into a calorie deficit, essentially, right? If you are using more energy than you are taking in, then necessarily your body needs to find the energy somewhere, and so it will then go to your fat stores, and so it will use up that energy. There you go. That's how you lose weight, by like almost literally burning the fat that is stored in your body, right? So that's how that works. But your body doesn't just want to just, you know, lose the fat, because obviously if you were trying to survive in the wild, and you just dropped all of the fat on your body, you would die, right? Like you wouldn't survive if you were in a calorie deficit consistently. You would at some point perish, right?
Yep.
A significant enough calorie deficit, right? Now, the way that this kind of works is that you're in a calorie deficit when you're sort of losing weight. So you're exercising and you're eating less, right? And you feel hungry and it's not great, blah, blah, blah. But then you can kind of get to a sort of new normal. Once you've hit your sort of target weight, you're like, okay, I don't need to be in a calorie deficit anymore. But then due to sort of hormonal changes and appetite changes and whatnot, it basically ends up being such that you kind of end up putting the weight back on anyway.
Right.
After that, right? Like, there are so many reasons to go into this, right? But it's not easy to maintain weight loss long term, especially when it's been done through like really aggressive dieting. I think like the most sort of reliable way to lose weight and keep that weight off is to do so like sort of slowly and consistently and make small life changes and sustainable life changes over a long period of time, right? If you lose like a ton of weight in 2 months, 3 months, you're probably going to put that back on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you lose it over 3 years, 4 years, less likely to. And yeah, the hormonal sort of aspect there is a big part of that. And like, there's also talks about intermittent fasting and like all of these sorts of things. And there is apparently some evidence. It's really hard to deal with this, man. There's some evidence saying that, yep, intermittent fasting can help, lose weight and maintain that weight loss. But then there's also conflicting evidence that says it's about the same as not doing intermittent fasting and just having like a lower calorie.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it's the same calorie intake, but just consistent every day.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a bit all over the shop, right? And so what do you think, I guess, about using drugs for weight loss?
Well, it's not ideal. It's definitely the kind of thing that comes about by a government going, we need to deal with this problem, and we can't really force our citizens to do anything because they have the freedom to make their own decisions. And so it's definitely something that gets like it's sort of decided on a high level. And I also think that, you know, if you just are going for taking a drug to lose the weight, and like you said, you've got to carry on possible calorie reductions and also exercise, it's not necessarily a great fix because you may well lose it and then you may well put it all back on.
Yeah.
So I think it's potentially a good like treatment alongside, but it's not going to be like the silver bullet that fixes everything. However, there are lots of reasons why governments, RNHS, etc., will want people to lose weight.
Mm.
They'll invest money in this because it will save them a lot of money from the comorbidities of being obese. Obese meaning being overweight and it having health impacts. And those are so much more expensive than like even a couple of years of this treatment will be, hopefully in a few years.
Yeah, it's about 150, I think it's 150 quidish a box, but they've got a deal with the NHS that, I don't know what it is. It's not publicly available, I don't think.
Yeah, it wouldn't be.
No, I know it wouldn't be, but yeah.
I actually listened to an interview by I think the CEO of this company, I think it's Nordst something.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about that, how they basically have a dual strategy in selling it, because one of the things you might have heard about WeGovy is like that it's going for very expensive on the private market and it's not in very good supply in sort of public health services.
Mm-hmm.
But he was talking about how basically they have a dual strategy. They have reserves for governments and for health services to get people it for free or at much reduced rates. And then they're dealing with the supply on the profit end, because ultimately they are a for-profit company, but they are like trying to serve both of those markets. They're not just selling it all to the private, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
They're making an awful lot of money. My favorite thing I learned about this is that at one point, I think it's Denmark the company's from, it's a Scandi company anyway, and at one point the company was valued at more money than the entire country that it's from makes in GDP in a year.
That's insane.
It's like something. It's like 500 billion or something like that. And yeah, that company was valued at more than the country it's from makes in one whole year because of this drug. Because it's just the idea that like you said, like obesity is such a big problem. The idea that you could have a drug that helps people at least with the initial stages of losing some of the weight is just amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't disagree with you, because, like, obviously there are people who want to lose weight and, like, it's not necessarily unhealthy for them to do so. And that, like, having a help there is not a bad thing, especially when it doesn't seem to have any huge sort of side effects or really sort of serious side effects. I mean, like, honestly, the sort of side effects that I can see, the risks that I've seen are, like, you know, nausea, diarrhea, constipation. There's, like, and then there's some things that I feel like if I don't mention, people are going to be like, you've not said this. Apparently acute kidney injury. I say apparently acute kidney injury from, like, volume contraction. So there not being enough fluid in your body and then damaging your kidneys that way. Also some kind of pancreatitis or some kind of pancreatic sort of disease. You can have some kind of problem with your pancreas, but I think it's, like, quite uncommon, like, really not a huge risk for most sort of people taking it under the conditions that have been sort of specified. Low risk of minor hypoglycemia, which is, like, not enough glucose in your blood. But then there's not been any evidence of major hypoglycemic episodes. It's just, like, your body can produce stuff that will reduce the efficacy of it. You could become allergic to it, essentially, but it's generally fine. I'll read this verbatim. Studies have shown that these adverse effects typically lead to an overall low discontinuation rate of around 10%. You know, it's not that bad. You know, the risks seem to be generally fine in terms of the drug in and of itself, but obviously there is more to it than that. So I'll heard your opinion. I'll just quickly read some American opinions. So 3/4 of Americans say they've heard a lot or a little about Wegovy or Ozempic or any sort of similar drugs. And of those, 53% think they're good options to lose weight for people with obesity or weight-related health condition. And about 19% say they're not good options. 28% say they're not sure, right? So most people, most Americans who know about these drugs think they're good options. But 12% of people who are familiar with the drugs say they're good options for people who want to lose weight but do not have a weight-related health condition. And 62% say they're not good options for that group of people, right? So basically, the way that this shakes out is that 26% aren't sure, but 28% aren't. Sorry, changed by 2% of the people who aren't sure between those two things. But if you have a weight-related health condition, Americans think, yeah, that's probably a fine thing to use. Otherwise, they're like, I don't think so, right? Clinical trials show this, and I got this from NICE, that you lose more weight when using a semaglutide alongside the sort of weight management support that I was mentioning, rather than just doing that sort of weight loss stuff without the drug. More weight is lost with this drug than another drug, not really important. And a few other things. It might decrease the risk of cardiovascular disease, which I mentioned earlier, right? So it seems to be relatively safe on that front. However, I think there's something that is very easy to overlook, and I think it's the social aspect, right? Like, yes, right now you've got to be above a certain weight and all of these sorts of things in order to get it, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to get it, like, you know, an off-brand or some kind of black market. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to say black market, but, like, an illegal version of it, right? Like, if we're honest, prescription drugs are not, like, 100% not available to the public, right? If you want a prescription drug, you could probably find someone who's willing to sell it to you. And so the obvious worry here is that people are probably going to start using this as a weight loss drug without the supervision of doctors, without the real need for it other than they just want to lose weight to look good. And I feel like that's where the real problem lies, right? Like, you can say, yeah, obesity is a health problem, like, it should be, you know, it should be sort of people should be able to sort of be treated for it if that's their choice, right? Now, that doesn't then mean that it's okay to say that all people who are fats or who have more than the average amount of fat on their body, right, should lose weight and have to lose weight and have to change their body and all of that. And in the culture that we live in, I just think that it is it's not the best thing, right? Especially given that, like, you know, young girls, young people in general, but especially young girls have their bodies dictated to them. This is what you need to look like from the youngest of ages. For us, it was magazines. Now it's, I don't know, TikTok, Instagram, whatever. And having that alongside a drug that will actually help you lose weight, right? You can imagine someone with an eating disorder getting their hands on it and, you know what I mean? Like, sort of using it and exacerbating the issues that they've got. Or someone with, you know, a different eating disorder, say like a binge eating disorder, using it but not addressing like the root cause of sort of the issue for them. And that's not to say that I think it shouldn't be used at all, right? Obviously we should be looking into this continually, which we're obviously would do. Like, we don't just let drugs kind of sit about and don't check to see what's going on with them. But I think that we can't get complacent and just sort of ignore the societal issues that get us to this place. For example, right, like, you can say governments want to tackle obesity, but a primary way of doing that would be making it so that people have the time and energy to be able to exercise regularly, and make it so that you don't need to go to a gym to do that. You can just do that in your daily life, right? Like a 15-minute city where you don't have to, you know, drive everywhere. You can actually walk, you know, to the shop or to your work, if that works for you. Do you know, things like that, right? On top of that, like fast food, not just fast food, but really, really unhealthy foods that are really, really cheap, cheaper than sort of overall healthier foods that can more easily contribute to a balanced diet, right? Things like that. Like, the government makes a ton of money off of that, right? They're not going to want to get rid of that. They'd rather just bring in a drug that kind of pushes the problem back for a bit. I think the issue here is not necessarily one of this drug should not be allowed to exist because it's inherently fat phobic, but more that, one, we shouldn't be medicalizing just people's bodies when it does not inherently pose a health risk to them, right? But, you know, further to that, I just think that we should probably not ignore the real actual problems, right? The real reasons that people, that obesity exists, the real reason that, you know, that all of these sorts of things are happening, the real reason that people want to lose weight, the real reasons for all of this, right? Like, fundamentally, it is a societal issue. It is an issue of, this is what people should look like, but also, this is a really cheap way to get people addicted to this stuff that isn't healthy for them. And these two things battling each other out, like, let's just dismantle that, right? And then it's fine if you genuinely have a health condition wherein it would benefit you to lose weight and this drug is going to help you to do that, then it would be totally fine because you don't need to worry about other people, you know, using it unhealthily. But until we kind of tackle that issue, this drug to me is, for weight loss, is just going to feel like a bit icky, you know? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not against it, but it's on a sort of knife set. It's a tightrope walk with this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was paying attention to everything you were saying there, waiting to see if there's anything I would add or anything I could like summarize into a concise point or a takeaway. But actually, you did that yourself, and I don't have anything to add to everything you're saying. So congratulations, that was very good. I mean, I definitely think that we should have it available. I definitely think it should be encouraged on the NHS because there are so many. So many issues caused by, health conditions caused by being overweight. And if this can be the thing that starts somebody on the journey to, if they have a weight that is unhealthy for them, that has other conditions, this could be the thing that gets them on the way. Because I think sometimes people lose hope.
Yeah.
And if something can go, right, we'll just get you started, and then the rest is your job, but you can see the finish line. It's not like so far away. Yeah. I think that's exciting. But everything you also said, like, we can't stop the work we do destigmatizing people having different bodies. Mm. And we definitely need to sort out how the crap we're putting in our bodies and what's cheap and what's expensive. Like, I have a place I go to in London when I'm writing, which serves like the most healthy and the most delicious food in central London, and it costs like £9 for a full lunch. And I'm like, if that can be done in central London for, like, literally Piccadilly Circus for £9 in central London, how the hell are we not doing that on a nationwide level? Why can I not go to a little place in the town I live and get a healthy meal in the evening for a fiver? Why is that not the case? Why can I go and buy a crap kebab for a fiver that's going to like increase my blood pressure and I'm literally giving money away to become less healthy? Yes, it's fun. Yes, it's nice. We enjoy nice foods. Great. But why is it, why do I give less money away to be less healthy and then cause a problem for the NHS down the line? That's just a dreadful situation. It, systemically, it's absolutely crap.
Capitalism good though. Capitalism good though. But yeah, no, I think I want to add, like, I so agree with you. And like, there's very little I would add. It's really just things I forgot to mention that, like, when we talk about overweight and obesity, I feel like there is necessarily a bit of pushback to that, and understandably so, right? Like, it's a very sort of difficult subject. And I think, to be clear, it's when you say overweight, when we're talking about overweight, we're not an obese, we're not trying to talk about people with, like, the, you know, in your very sort of normal range of bodies. When I say normal, I mean, I genuinely do just mean, like, as in closest to the sort of mean, right? Like the people who are, like, generally just kind of like in that average range. But, like, yeah, when we talk about this, we're not, like, it's probably, like, you would know if this is referring to you, because you will probably have these health conditions alongside, you know, your body weight, right? This is not to people who are, you know, like, big. Sure,
yeah.
But don't have health issues associated with that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's very easy for people to be reactive to this because, like, you know, there are so many, like, people on podcasts like us just saying, yeah, fat people are, like, inherently morally inferior, you know? Like, that's not what we're saying. We're very clearly talking about sort of specifically health issues brought on with excessive body weight.
I should clarify that I should have used the word obese there, because I'm specifically talking about having more fat on your body and also there being health complications. And the word overweight is so broad.
Yeah.
During the pandemic, I put on some weight because I wasn't exercising because we were in a pandemic. And I fell into the overweight category on the BMI. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, that's, I don't feel big at all. And yet I'm being called medically overweight.
I've never not been in the overweight category.
Wow. Yeah.
Never not been. And
you look fine.
Well, yeah, look, I've gained a bit of weight recently, sure. But even at, like, my slimmest and trimmest, right? I realized this. I was like, oh, I've generally got a decent amount of muscle on my body. I'm probably never going to be able, like, I don't think I can probably very healthily be, feasibly be not in that, like, just verging into that slightly overweight thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I could. I'm a big, tall guy, sure, but also, like, I got heavy bones, probably. And that's a thing, right? Is that racism? I don't know. no, but you know, like, I've never been a super slim person, and it's just not, like, it's not something that I particularly want, but, like, it's not something that is necessarily feasible for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not, like, people shouldn't feel obligated to make their body fit beauty standards, you know, either direction. Like, we and to be clear as well, you know, we also equally care about people being underweight.
Mm-hmm.
We speak about this as well, you know, people it's excessively going to the gym and things like that. I think we've done an entire episode on eating disorders where we spoke about this kind of stuff, and it's like it's a difficult one, because we know what we're talking about, right? But it's very easy to have it taken the wrong way, because so often people with perfectly healthy bodies will be told, you're unhealthy because you don't look the way I expect you to look, you know? And I think there's a big difference between being bigger and, you know, being unable to move or wash yourself because of your weight, right? Like, those are two vastly different things. And we're talking about the latter. That's what we're talking about. But yeah, no, I think fundamentally, this just comes down to an issue of society being pretty bloody rubbish, and something that is morally neutral in and of itself being kind of bastardized just a touch to suit society's whims, you know? That's where I stand on this whole Ozempic thing, you know? That's my two cents. That's all I really have to say on that. Do you have anything else you want to add, Luke?
I don't think I could add a single other thing. That was fantastic.
Well, I think there's only time for one more thing, Luke. It's the Quickfire Quiz.
Dun, 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 da. Wee Govy edition.
So the rules for the Quickfire Quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between you and the audience, Luke. The first person to answer the question after finish asking wins. What do they win?
A little bit of Wee Govy if they want and or need it and get it prescribed and they want it and that it's going to help them and I love you.
So the question for you is, what is the chemical name of Ozempic or Wegovy?
I don't know. Ozempic. Is it Ozempic?
No, it's...
No. I don't know.
Give it a go. You're getting close. Semaglutide. It was painful. This episode's gone on long enough.
I really hope you edit that down. That was like a minute of my life.
Yeah, he's going to have to be edited down or just cut out entirely. But that is all from us. Before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Rev Lunar and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe to new episodes every Sunday and run Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? Support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find us on Twitter, SciGuys Pod on Twitter, and at SciGuys on Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Bye, man. Goodbye.
Go away.
Yeah,
I don't want to look at your stinky face ever again.
Yeah.